There's a time and a place for a fillet of fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Today's episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by Best Fiends, the mobile puzzle game with over 100 million downloads and tons of five-star reviews. Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Today on The Grave Talks, the house on Pulteney Road.
Clearing off all of the cobwebs, pulling things down, sitting around, memories coming from my head. Oh, the nostalgia, when I recall the moments we had, wanting to grow up seems so distant. Pull me back and watch me go, like penny cards from years ago, years ago.
What do you do when the paranormal dabbling of a deceased relative haunts a family generation after generation? Is there a way to undo or send back any of the spirits that entered into the family space after the fact? Today we hear of the house infested with many spirits. Spirits that would continue to haunt a family years after they left the comfort of its walls. This is the story of the house on Pulteney Road from Stephanie Bonney.
Talk about how life can be scary.
The house itself was built in honor of a Colonel Pulteney Henry Murray. It was in 1882. Actually, he was a captain during the Egyptian War, and that the road was named after him, and the houses there were erected in his honour. So it's a really nice kind of story around the house, and you'd think, you know, it's a strong house, and it was built, you know, with a strong background and a lot of history behind it. But unfortunately, the house itself wasn't built haunted. It became haunted. My family made it that way.
It's an interesting thing to say about your family, which is very
totally
true.
My granddad's fault, totally.
In many cases, that's how it works. I mean, in some cases, mm-hmm. we're digging back and we're discovering, oh, the land that it was built on had something there, and then that's kind of how things happen. But so it sounds like this was just constructed like any other home of the time, built, you know, for life, for living in.
It was a family home, a big family home, that had no bad feeling at all when my family moved in. It wasn't built on any kind of cemetery or something like that. Mm-hmm. It literally was just a good house.
So as time progresses, they move into the house, and you mm-hmm. said your family made it haunted. Begin to walk us down that path.
It's a long story.
That's fine.
For years, I grew up listening to my family telling me the stories. I've always had a fascination with the paranormal. From a really, really young age, it was obvious that I had, I don't know, I'm not psychic. But I had the ability, I'll call it an ability because my granddad had the same ability. And I was fascinated with the house, which my family grew up in. So it was my great grandparents who moved into the house in 1923. It was my great Nan Flo, who was Lolly Nanny. I knew her as Lolly Nanny because she gave lollipops to all the children as they passed by the house. She and my great granddad Henry bought the house. They got it for a good price. And yeah, they lived quite happily there until she had her first child, which was my granddad Dick. I knew him as Grandad Dick, but his name was Richard. But I knew him as Grandad Dick. So she had him, and that was the first time that she kind of, the house itself at that point was fine. Mm-hmm. My granddad, he grew up and he made a friend at school. And sorry, I'm trying to get right to the beginning of it all, but he made a friend at school. Mm-hmm. And he was with his friend when his friend died. And it was his friend's ghost that first appeared to my granddad. And that was kind of how he knew that he had this ability. So he didn't go looking for it. He didn't go straight into seances or Ouija boards or anything like that. He was visited by his friend's ghost.
What happened there when the friend visited your grandfather after his passing? How did the child die? And then what was the first occurrence? What was that like when he visited?
He was hit by a car. Okay. And it affected my granddad quite badly. He kind of went into himself a little bit, and I'm trying to think of the first times that he saw him. I think he was a teenager. With that book in front of me, I don't know dates off the top of my head. I'm just telling the story as I remember it, as I recall. Mm-hmm. And he got given a camera. This is one of the stories I remember. He got given a camera and he took pictures at his friend's wedding. It was one of the first, not jobs he got, but he was asked to take pictures. And he took some photos, and in the photos he developed them. My granddad was very creative, and he always developed his own photographs. And he took photos of the graveyard before and after the ceremony. And when he developed the photos, he saw his friend Harry in the photos. And yeah, that was kind of the first time that he saw him. Wow. I think he grew up. Lots of things happened to my granddad, but it was kind of like the, you know, people say, oh, you hear people moving around the house when you're at home alone, things like that. So the book talks kind of in places about that, but to me that isn't proof of the paranormal. There can be explanation for that. So yeah, so the first big thing for him was seeing Harry. He got visited in when he in his dreams as well. He had these reoccurring dreams of Harry and how Harry, I call him Harry. He's Harry in the book. His real name isn't Harry, but mm-hmm. how he blamed my granddad for his death. But I think that possibly was the guilt that my granddad felt.
Sure. So your grandfather recounted to you some guilt about this child's death of being hit by a car?
So my granddad, he passed before I was born. He died 10 months before okay. I was born. So the stories that I grew up hearing were from my nan, his wife, mm-hmm. and my uncles, in particular, well, my dad and my uncle Richard. So I learned this from them, from him telling them. Another thing I should say is the reason when my granddad was there when his friend passed, he first saw the man in black, which is how we refer to him. He's kind of like an entity which my family have been haunted by for as far back as I can remember. Myself, my dad, my uncles, my nan in particular, and my granddad. And he's the entity that the book kind of focuses on. because he's the entity that we couldn't get rid of. He couldn't get rid of.
Mm-hmm. So it starts here with this child ghost that dies in a tragic, sudden car accident. Your grandfather experiencing him. He's there, sees him in photos, comes to him in dreams. So he's beginning to understand there's something more to this world. There's something otherworldly going on. And this would be kind of, I guess, an opinion-based question based on what you know of your grandfather, from what you heard from your family. But what do you think, or what have you heard he felt when he started to have those dreams and started to and saw the photo of his friend after he had passed? Do you know what my question, if I were to ask him directly, is what's going through your mind as these things happen? But what do you think was going through his mind as these events began to occur?
I don't think he was ever frightened, particularly by much. I think he was a fearless man. I think that he had an extreme interest in the paranormal because he lost his friend, and I think he wanted to reach out to him. I think that he had just such an interest that it didn't kind of fathom him. He wanted to find out more. He wanted to connect with Harry, and he wanted to find out this man in black. He kept seeing him. He had dreams of him, and he wanted to know who he was. And yeah, why he kept trying to contact him.
Yeah. So the man in black, I want to fully understand this. Is the man in black, is that the child, or is this somehow related to the child? Maybe I'm missing.
It's not related. He's not related to the child.
Okay. Like there's some sort of connection, or not a connection here, but a door opened of some sort of.
I think that's exactly right. I think perhaps when my granddad was young, there wasn't a massive thing about the paranormal. Mm-hmm. There wasn't, people didn't speak about it. It wasn't like it is nowadays. And, you know, I have a following, you have a following of people who have an interest in the paranormal. I don't think that was so back then. So I don't think it was something you spoke about. I think if it was an ability that you had, I think it was something that you maybe tried to hide until you kind of dabbled a bit yourself, which is what my granddad did.
Okay.
And he ended up being not famous in his area, but he'd done seances on a regular basis, and people went to him for help. I think he tried to keep it under wraps. He didn't tell his parents. He just wanted to kind of get to the bottom of it by himself.
Back to the conversation in just a moment. First, I need to thank our supporter today, Best Fiends, the mobile puzzle game with over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews. Obviously, we love doing this show, and these guys are supporting our program, so please do check out their app. We love, obviously, talking about ghost stories here. And as you dig a little bit more into a story, the more layers you obviously uncover. That's what we love about Best Fiends and the puzzle game, because the deeper you go, the more awesome it gets, really. They're always updating this thing as well. They really treat it like a service, which is great because of all of the additions that you constantly see popping up. I'm on level 156 now. I've been loving playing this for several months. It's kind of like a mental palate cleanser when you just kind of need to get your mind off of stuff. Take this thing out on your Android or your Apple device and get away from it all for a little bit. I actually, I've been doing it for quite a bit. I used to play this thing, find myself playing it at the supermarket, but right now I'm just kind of finding myself playing it all around the house at random times where it's like, okay, no more news. Let's do something else. You'll love it too. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can even play offline. Over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews. Best Fiends is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Now back to the conversation.
So he's a curious teenager or young adult at this point, after at a younger age, is trying to find some answers, some meaning, maybe just some closure, probably deeper than anything else for what happened with his friend. And he's starting to see the evidence of this friend coming back. So he starts dabbling in seances and things of that nature.
Yeah, exactly that. He met my nan. Okay. He used to play the piano. He was a very, very talented musician, and he played the piano at a local pub that's still there. I can't remember off the top of my head what it was called, but it was almost opposite where he lived. And he used to go there and play on a weekly basis. And he went this one week, and my nan was there. And he became very close to my nan very quickly. And he told her about what happened to his friend. And he told her about seeing him. And she agreed to go back to the house and do a Ouija board with him. In fact, I think it might have been her who actually suggested it, because she'd spoken to someone who knew someone who'd done a Ouija board, and they'd said it worked. So she said to him, why don't we try this out? And they went back to the house, and they did a Ouija board. And the photo which my granddad had of the boy appeared before both of them. And that was kind of evidence then, because it happened in front of my nan. My granddad then knew, yes, yeah, something's happening here. Mm-hmm. And I think the clarity then, he was just kind of relieved that someone else had seen it, seen something happen. And yeah, that's then when he started thinking, okay, I'm gonna look into this more.
Was this like their first date when they met at the pub? And
do you know,
hey, let's
what?
Go do a Ouija board.
They kind of met, had a brief chat, and then they met again, and maybe met another time. And then he said, "Come on, do you want to come?" He told her the story, and he said, "Do you want to come back? Do you want to come back to my house?" Yeah. she was quite brave. But to be honest, back then, if I'd have been younger and someone had a story like that, I would, even if I didn't like them, I probably would have gone with them just out of curiosity.
Of course. Yeah. So how interesting. So right from the get-go, she's indoctrinated somewhat into this world and what he's experiencing. Mm-hmm. And then this reality for him. So obviously this continues, and he... To tell me what progresses as time goes on, as he gets older, what other occurrences begin to happen in the home, and what sort of actions is he taking that may be bringing some of these things in?
Okay, so I'll start at the beginning. And my nan and granddad had their first child, who was my Uncle Richard. But for the sake of the story, I called him Robert, because obviously my granddad is Richard and so is my uncle. So it would have been really confusing in the book. So I refer to him in the book as Robert, but it's my Uncle Richard. And she had Uncle Rich, and I think it dulled down a bit. I think doing the Ouija board with my nan frightened him, and they left it for a few months. Then she fell pregnant, and he didn't dare kind of do anything else in the house. So she had Uncle Rich, and he was asleep in his cot one day, and she was in the kitchen. The house, so basically, I didn't explain. My great nan and granddad lived in the house. They then had, obviously, my granddad, Dick, and they lived in the house together as a three. Then when he met my nan, she moved into the house as well, because my family didn't have a lot of money then. So it was a very big house. So they thought it was best that she moved in. Then she had her first child. So my great grandparents moved upstairs. And how the house is kind of laid out, it's almost split. So you go up the stairs and you can go left and you can go right. And they lived up there on one side of the house, and they converted one of the downstairs rooms into a nursery. So my uncle was asleep in the nursery as a baby, and my nan was in the kitchen, and she could hear him crying. So she went towards the room. No one else was in the house. She went towards the room, and all of a sudden he stopped crying and he started giggling. And my nan said that was the point when she kind of stopped and thought he was giggling like he did when he saw her. So she thought that's strange. So she slowed down her pace. She walked towards the door. And when she opened the door, there was a woman standing over his cot. She had very, very long, dark hair. And she couldn't actually see her son through the hair that was hanging around him. So she kind of stood there. She panicked. But she almost said she was kind of transfixed. I don't know if you've had any experiences, but it's kind of how it makes you think, how you feel. You watch a film and you think, oh, I would have reacted this way. You know, you see something like that and you run out, but you don't, because you're so fascinated, I don't know is the right word, but you're so taken aback that you kind of want to watch something play out. And I think that's how my nan felt. And although she was terrified and she wanted to grab her child, this woman was clearly in the way. And she watched as the woman stood up, and as she passed by my nan said she was like faceless. Again, I don't know if you've experienced anything like it, but sometimes when you see something, there's no features. Mm-hmm. It's strange. I've experienced it once in my life, and yeah, it's a strange thing that you can see that there's a face there, but you can't see eyes, you can't see nostrils. It's kind of like a blank canvas. And she moved past. My nan ran over to the cot, grabbed my uncle, and ran out of the house and basically waited for my granddad to return home. And that was kind of then the first time that my nan really experienced something paranormal. And it wasn't the last time that this same woman visited my uncle or visited my family. And they think my nan and granddad, after doing the Ouija board, when they moved into the house, they obviously heard things in the house. They could hear footsteps when no one was upstairs. They'd hear that the taps would come on, things like that, normal sort of poltergeist activity, which again, I kind of dismiss in my life, because you kind of just, to me, that's not evidential. Like if you said to somebody who was a skeptic, oh yeah, I hear people running around, or I hear this, they just shake their head and go, yeah, okay. But sometimes they have to really see something, and it's those things that in my book I try to emphasize on, the things that are inexplainable.
Sure. So when your nan starts seeing these things and she has that experience, and what an experience, mm-hmm. to have, basically, uh-huh. a full body apparition sitting up out of a chair and then walking through a room, that's, mm-hmm. that's nothing you can look at or walk away to the other room and write off as, oh, those were just footsteps, but maybe squirrels. No. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
You can usually have...
My nan was opposite. She was completely different to my granddad. She hated it. She was scared of it. She didn't like it at all. Mm-hmm. Whereas my granddad, when he got home and my nan told him that, was kind of like, wow, yeah, we need to start doing something.
Sure. What exactly is going through your grandmother's mind at this point when she has that experience? I mean, is she comfortable with the house? Is she comfortable with what your grandfather had been experimenting with? What goes on there? What's that conversation like, I'm wondering?
The problem is, people say to me now, well, if you're telling the truth, if this all happened, I mean, there's a lot which I haven't discussed with you, but they say to me, well, why didn't your family leave? Why didn't they move? And the reason they didn't is because they didn't have the money to. Mm-hmm. And you're talking back now to when the Second World War hit, and both my granddad and great granddad were called to war. So they went away, and my nan had to be evacuated with her two sons, because by this point in the story, my dad had been born. So he now was, my dad was around three and my uncle's around four, and they were evacuated. And they went out to the country. I can't think now, Orton somewhere in the countryside. And they kind of forgot about it for a little while. And it wasn't then until that my granddad come back from war that it kind of all kicked off again. And I think my nan was just hoping that it wouldn't kick off again, and that when they left the house, they'd be leaving it for long enough that it would just kind of pass by and they'd go home and the house would be fine. But it wasn't, because obviously how my granddad always explained it was, the house was never haunted. He was. Mm-hmm. So it obviously would never leave.
So when he comes back from the war and they're back into the house again, mm-hmm. is he still doing anything, as far as you had mentioned earlier, as far as like seances or anything of that nature to bring these things in, or was it all kind of done in the past?
Okay, so I'll bring the story up to when he starts the seances. Okay. The reason why my nan eventually agreed to him doing them was they were all home, and my granddad heard downstairs them a noise in the nursery room. And when he went downstairs, my nan was there, and the children as well. And there was a toy plane. It was my uncle's favorite toy plane. Sorry, at this point, there was another baby involved. Sorry, I'm terrible with timelines. If I don't write things down, I don't, off the top of my head, I'm just kind of thinking what's going on. But sure. My uncle Keith was born. He was the youngest of the three boys, and it was his favorite toy, the toy aeroplane. And it didn't have batteries in, there was no motor, it was just a basic, really old-fashioned toy aeroplane, and it was actually flying around the room. It sounds absolutely crazy, and if someone said that to me, I'd probably laugh at them. But they all swore blind that they saw it just flying around the room, like I say, no batteries, no nothing. And when my uncle ran in, the plane dropped to the floor, and my nan kind of turned around and said, okay, something needs to be done now. And like I say, back then, it just wasn't talked about. It wasn't something you'd really go to the church about and say, yeah, come, you know, get a priest in, do something. Because at this point, it was just kind of minor things that were happening. Although a couple of things that had happened where my nan felt slightly threatened, I suppose, the woman, she didn't feel comfortable in the house. It wasn't something happening on a real regular basis. But when this happened, my nan explained that it did feel slightly more threatening, because it happened in the children's room, and that's what she kind of never wanted to happen. She didn't want to get the children involved. So that was when my granddad started doing seances, and he had quite a few friends at the pub. I think it was a thing maybe men used to do back in the day. They used to, well, I suppose they still do, go down the pub, but it was kind of a thing. He'd go down the pub and have a chat with his mates and have a beer. And one night they got talking about the house and the things that were happening, and it was his friends at the pub who agreed to go back to the house and do a seance with him. That's how it started.
Wow. Which is very interesting, because today, when you're thinking you're going to rid a home of something, quite often the last thing you're going to do is, let's bring a bunch of the friends in from the bar and have a seance. You know,
but exactly that. But the story progresses, something that my uncle always said to me was that his dad, my granddad, always believed that he would be able to, for every bad spirit that he brought into the house, he always thought that he would be able to contact something better and something good. And he always thought that a good spirit could overcome the badness and kind of equalize it out and almost help settle the bad spirit. But it doesn't work like that. All he kept doing was bringing more and more spirits into the house. And the first real seance that he did with his friends, he put one of his Polaroid cameras, and he put one of them in the middle of the table, and they all sat around the table. They used to do their seances in the front bedroom at the front of the house. It was a big room, and I know this because in 2009 the house went up for sale. It's always up for sale. It's been in the paper before. Always up for sale every year, always up for sale. And then it wasn't up for sale for about 6 years, I think it was, and suddenly it was up for sale, and I was like, oh my god, I've got to go and look at it. I've got to go and see the house, because I don't even think when I was a baby I'd been inside. So I went, and I knew I was going to be writing the book, and I went and I looked around the house. I pretended that I was keen on buying it, and I saw the house for myself, and I saw the front room where the seances were held. And it's a very big, it's an echoey room, you know, a room that's big, high ceilings, big bay windows, very, very horrible room. I'll go into that at the end, what I experienced when I went in there. But that's where he held his seances. He had a big oval table, wooden table in there, and they all stood around. He put the camera in the middle, and he'd always start with a prayer, and he'd say, if anybody's there, give us a sign. And in the films, when you do that, it's amazing, isn't it? Because 10 seconds later someone's banging on the door and throwing the table up in the air. But it doesn't work like that in real life. You can be sat there for 20 minutes, nothing happens, and nothing happened for probably 20 minutes, half an hour. I wasn't there, I'm not sure, but my uncle explained to me, my nan explained to me, it always took a long time. And all of a sudden, the camera flashed twice, and he got the photos and he took them down to his dark room. and he left them in there. And then he went back to have a look, because they take a while to develop. And one of the photos was of the room that they were in. Now, the room had a dressing table in it, had a bit of furniture, I think a wooden wardrobe and such. But in the photo, there was nothing. No table, no people, no nothing. It was a completely empty room. The second photo, I'm getting goosebumps now just thinking about it. It was a picture of my nan sitting in a what looked like rocking chair, and she was naked, and hundreds and hundreds of tiny little babies clinging to her body. And yeah, it's just, my nan had the photo. She had the photo until she died. And when she saw it, she just wanted, she wanted my granddad to stop. But for my granddad, he then felt that they were being, not attacked, but something was kind of focusing on my nan. So he got more of a taste for it, and he wanted to delve further.
That can't be a recipe for a smooth marriage at that moment.
No, I mean, my nan always supported him.
Yeah.
And they still always thought that it was the house.
Yeah.
But when they needed to have thought, you know, when my granddad's parents moved into the house, there was nothing there. It was a really happy family home. But it's kind of like he tried to help the situation, but by trying to help the situation just ultimately kept making it worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And instead of him thinking, right, okay, this is a direct attack at my nan's real name is Ellen, but I knew her as Nellie Eileen. So if I say Eileen, her name is Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
But he felt it was a direct attack at Ellen. So he felt he wanted to just keep delving further.
Mm-hmm.
And she also, my nan kept having dreams of a man in black. She just kept having the same dreams as like what my granddad was having. So I think he just felt like he had to protect her, and the only way he could was to keep doing more and more seances.
Yeah.
And I'll go into another story, a seance which happened quite early on in the beginning as well. My granddad's, it got out that my granddad did these seances. He must have done a few that, you know, nothing really happened. But I was never told too much about those. I was only told about the stories, you know, when something big happened. Now, you've got to think he was doing a seance every month for years and years and years and years. And I was probably told 20 stories or so of things that happened. So there was a lot of times, it's not like people, you know, people say to me, oh, what, and every time he did a seance something happened. No, it didn't. You know, it probably didn't, but sometimes it did. And when it did, it really did affect the people who attended the seances. Another seance that they did, they all held hands rather than a Ouija board, and, you know, same sort of thing. My granddad would say, is anybody there. Now, there was always at least sort of six or eight people. So there were big seances who, you know, that attended. And this one particular time, there was a guy there, and he started kind of touching his back, and everyone was like, are you okay? And he was like, no, it's my back. And he started screaming. He broke the chain, which, you know, everybody says you're not supposed to do. I think my granddad at some point in the book, I remember saying, he turned around to somebody and said, don't worry about the chain. There's already so much in the house, you can let go now. But he ripped off his top, and on his back there was blood all over his back, more like the top across his shoulder blade. And they rubbed it clean, and he was screaming in pain with his back. And it just had the name, again, the woman's name. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't remember. I should have written it down. It's all in the book. It was a woman's name. And some say it was Helen. Someone said it says Helen. And he looked around and he said, what? And they said, Helen. And he ran out of the house, no explanation. And everyone was kind of left dumbfounded. And it was found out a few days later that in actual fact, he'd split up with his girlfriend that morning. Her name was Helen, or whatever the name was.
Mm-hmm.
And she had committed suicide that afternoon. And yeah, and her name was forever on his back. So, yeah.
it's just, it's one of those things where, I mean, there's an element to the male, I'm going to fix it thing going on here, where, except instead of adding more duct tape to something, he's digging in deeper and deeper, thinking with well intent, although it's not going anywhere good, but digging, to try and fix this problem. I mean, it's interesting to hear about the thought process of, well, yes, there's negative things coming through, but if I can counterbalance that with positive, it should all even itself out, when in the end, you're just getting more spirits in there that are a mix of everything. And then it almost, I mean, sounds like at some point here, you get a very much, I don't want to say portal, but maybe it's something like that, where they can kind of come and go to a certain extent, or they're all stuck there. And they come in and they have different intent and they have different reasons for being. For example, they're the Helen spirit, if that was in fact Helen, showing up with this anger and this angst at the boyfriend that just broke up with her. I guess I would also wonder about, with something like this, when you have such, it seems like some dark stuff going on there. Mm-hmm. Were these all just, or were some of them just angry people, angry souls of the living, or do you feel that something else darker had even gone into this through the seances and the actions of your grandfather?
I think literally the Ouija boards, the seances, I think they, like you say, acted as a type of portal and were kind of contacting anything and anyone. And the Ouija boards and the seances that he did, it seemed that people were just trying to come through, either to him or to someone who was there. But it did seem like they were particularly angry. And I think, to an extent, I think most spirits that do come back have an issue. They have something to resolve, don't they? Because if they died peacefully and they could rest in peace then, couldn't they? But these spirits, they couldn't. And the spirits that I've experienced in my time aren't happy. They're spirit. I think for anyone who has the ability, you sense a spirit, and it's not a nice feeling. I've lived in houses as an adult, and some houses I go into and it feels clean, it feels fine, and I could be able to sleep there alone with all the lights out and be really happy, even with what's gone on with me in my past. But then all of a sudden you can go into a house and you can step foot in there and you think, no, I don't want to be here. And it's an energy. It's, some people say with ghosts, even people who don't believe it, when people die, they leave an energy, and it's kind of that you see, you know, you can see move through a house. You can feel when things go cold. It's a ghost's energy. Whether or not you believe in the paranormal, I think you've got to be a very strong-minded, narrow-minded person to say, when you die, you die. There's nothing else, because you do leave behind something. And I think with the house on Pulteney Road, it was so full of energy, and it was so full of what my granddad was contacting, that it was just impossible to ever get clean. And even when I went to view the house in 2009, the woman who lived there, I obviously had to be very careful how I spoke, and I couldn't let her know that, you know, my family did live there. But I was speaking to her about the house, and it felt so cold, so damp, so empty, even though people lived in there. It's a strange feeling when you walk into a house like that. And she always said, you know, she said, it's always cold. It is. She didn't speak positively about the house. And I don't think you can speak positively about a house when it's haunted like that.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Stephanie Boddy about the house on Pulteney Road. If you'd like to learn more about it, check out her book wherever books are sold, as well as Amazon and Barnes & Noble. In part two, we ask Stephanie how it felt the first time she entered the house after all the years of it being in someone else's possession after her family had sold it. What kind of extreme experiences fell upon the residents of the home while they lived there? What happened when Stephanie's mother attended a seance in the house on Pulteney Road? Did the spirits of the dead
that were conjured by Stephanie's grandfather stay in the house once everyone had left. What was the shocking result of the very last seance performed by Stephanie's grandfather before his death? And what did a Ouija board tell him? And who was the man in black that haunted the house on Pulteney Road? To hear part two of our interview, become a gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. These are the folks who financially allow this show to exist. It's only $5 a month. And with your $5 a month support, you get access to part two of this interview and every single interview we've ever done. Hundreds of interviews at patreon.com/thegravetalks or find the link at thegravetalks.com. Check it out. You will not regret it. It's hours upon hours, really days upon days or weeks upon weeks of nonstop paranormal shows and interviews. You will love it. Patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month gets you all the premium content and allows this show to exist. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I am Tony Bruschi. Thank you for the support and thank you for listening.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.